Welcome to the College Prep Genius Radio Show, where we can answer all your questions about getting college for free. Today, your host is Jean Burke, the author of College Prep Genius, The No-Brainer Way to SAT Success, and you can find her at collegeprepgenius.com. And I'm the moderator, Felice Gerwitz. Welcome. Welcome. This is Felice Gerwitz, and this is another episode of College Prep Genius Radio with our special guest, Jean Burke. And today we are going to talk about the truth about the SAT, the truth about the new SAT, that is. And this is podcast number 26. So if you are looking for the show notes, go to collegeprepgenius.com/podcast, and you'll find them there, as well as the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.com. Go to that front page, and you'll see the wonderful little icon for this show, College Prep Genius, and there you will find the show notes for this episode, episode 26. And we are going to be covering all kinds of great information today about the truth about the SAT, as well as some misinformation and some things that are out there that you might run across online. And that is the great thing about having Jean with us, is that she can take care of all of those questions we may have. And so we want to thank our sponsor, which is College Prep Genius. You'll want to go to collegeprepgenius.com and sign up for Jean's newsletter, and there you will find up-to-date information about the SAT and all kinds of things that will help you and your student be able to, crack that code of the SAT, as well as find out information about colleges. And so let's get started with our show. And now here's our resident expert, Jean Burke. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jean, today we are going to talk about the new SAT, and the topic is the truth about the SAT. And one of the things I love that I think our audience just doesn't understand is how you are truly an expert in this area. You know, you are a past homeschool mom, and you are not afraid to roll up your sleeves, proverbially, and get into what this test is all about. So let's start with a little bit of an overview about, I know we've talked about it in past shows, but maybe somebody's stopping in for the first time. And so we want to talk a little bit about what they can expect from the new SAT that's a little bit different. And then in the show notes, I will be putting in links to past shows that may go into a little bit more detail.
Okay, great. Well, you know, the new SAT will be rolled out this coming March, so we're talking, you know, a couple months from now. And what families are going to find?
Yeah, 2016. Yes. So if you're listening later in the year, then it came out. So, yeah.
And what you're going to find is the main differences in the new formatting, if your kids have taken the old test, is going to basically be the structure of the test. It really looks more like your ACT in the sense that instead of having 10 long sections with about 25 minutes, you're going to have 4 sections. And, you know, again, if the listeners don't know why it was changed, you know, it ultimately came down to money. You know, when David Coleman took over as the president, you know, there was 1.7 million kids taking the ACT and 1.6 million taking the SAT. And so first time in history that ever happened. So they decided to change up the whole formatting, again, to look very similar to the ACT. As a matter of fact, some of the ACT writers jumped on board to start writing for the SAT. So you're going to see a lot of familiarity there. But what we're going to find on as far as scoring is the SAT is going back to that pre-2005 1600. And instead of having your 3 sections that you have right now, which is math, critical reading, and writing, you're going to go back to the 2 sections. Although, what's going to be different with the 2 sections is you will have the math, and then the other section will be reading and writing combined. And, you know, one of the things that people got used to was that a lot of colleges didn't even, you know, take the writing section into consideration. But now that they've put the writing with the reading, it's more important than ever. to do well in the writing sections because they are combining the score. We're also going to have the essay optional. Now, in the current SAT, before it changes in March of 2016, the essay is the first section, and it's part of the whole entire test as far as scoring. But what's going to happen is it's going to go to an optional formatting, which means that it will no longer be section number one. It will actually be at the end of the test. So the students that have opted out of the essay will be able to just go ahead and leave, and those who have opted in will be able to just stay around and take the essay. Now, you can change your mind. So if a student says, you know what, I think I'd better take the essay, that's not a problem, one way or the other, to change your mind. Now, I said this before, and I really want to emphasize, you know, most students, when they see something optional, they're probably going to say, yay, I like that, I don't have to do it. But I want to give three reasons why every student should write that essay. First of all, it does give your profile a more complete look. And that's really important when it comes to your application as far as getting into college. It pretty much shows you went the extra mile. Number two, if a college admissions counselor is on the fence about your child's application and their whole profile that they're looking at, sometimes it can be the determining factor. And number three, oftentimes your child can be exempt from a writing class if they did well on the SAT essay. So definitely want to do that essay. And again, it's like the rest of the SAT. It's beatable. It's not that your child has to be an amazing writer. Not that they may be an amazing writer, but that's not the criterion when it comes to writing the essay. Another important, I think, difference is there are no penalties for guessing. The current SAT up until 2016 of March, if you got a question wrong, you got a quarter of a point taken away, and, you know, your score could go down dramatically if you guessed on a lot of questions and got them wrong. So now we don't have the guessing penalty. There is less geometry, although there are more advanced math, like some elements of trigonometry. And you still do get about a minute per question. So some of the sections you get about 45 seconds. Some of them you get about 70 seconds. So if you average it out, you're still talking about a minute per question. So that's important to keep in mind that you're not really getting any more time. The other big difference as far as the formatting is there'll be four answer choices and not five. And they have omitted the equating section. So that is that experimental section that didn't count. So that is kind of the test for the nuts and bolts, of the new changes.
Okay, very good. And what people don't know is that the reason you know so much is because you have had access to the test and you have really analyzed it. So tell us about that procedure, that what you've done. And basically, Jean, you've done it because you have updated your curriculum as well in your College Prep Genius book. So they are... are going to be up to date. You are going through you finished your rewrite, and that should be to publication very, very soon. So as I said earlier in the show, to be sure that you sign up for the e-zine that you have at collegeprepgenius.com so that people can, get that up-to-date information when your stuff is available. But tell us about being able to, the ability that you had to go through the test.
Well, one of the things, too, I want to really encourage the listeners is when you're looking into programs for test prep in general, you really want to look at how the test was created, the program. There's so many companies out there. And, I started getting information back last March 2015 about programs, new SAT programs. And to me, that was a complete red flag because the College Board had not even released their test yet until the very end of June, early July. And so if the actual test makers don't even have a test out, then any company, that produces programs or books or whatever having to do with tests, obviously they're not looking at the real test. So once they released a full-length test back at the very beginning of July, they came out with their official study guide as well as some practice tests. I was gone most of the month of July just traveling and speaking. So I really started delving into it in August, and my house looked like a war zone because I had papers everywhere. And so what I did was, you know, I had four full-length tests. I had a full-length PSAT. And what I did was I started just taking each section and looking at what patterns kept reoccurring, what was similar to the existing test, what is it that are the most common errors that they keep using over and over again, let's say in the writing section. And so I'd write these down, and I would go back, and then I would say, okay, so, you know, is it, how similar is this to the existing program that I already have? And, you know, one of the things that is great is that anybody who has my program now will understand that just your basic general strategies will work on the new test. We've already got several testimonials back from the new PSAT that was released last October in 2015, and these are families who have my existing program, and their children are already scored up into the 99th percentile, which is national merit range. So even though the majority of some of the formatting of the questions have changed, if you understand test-taking techniques and that this is really about logic and understanding that the questions often can be very misleading and that you have to look for those answers that don't fall into the trap, then you can do very well. But it takes a long time, and I'm constantly even updating myself. That's why sometimes it's hard for me to get programs out or books out, is because I'm always adding or changing or saying, oh, that's really cool. I want to add that. So sometimes I have to just stop myself and come to a stopping point. But hopefully what we've done is gone in there and taken the new formatting. And like I say, many similar strategies are still going to work. For example, in the reading section of the SAT, currently there are three types of questions. On the new SAT, what they've done is they've kept those same three questions and they've added two more different ones. So it wasn't a matter of having to learn five new question types. If you already had the program, you already knew the three, you just added the two on top of it. So it's been quite an experience, and it's definitely not easy, going through it all. And like I say, I'm still, seeing new things and adding, and I'll always be doing that. I love to add new things all the time. So, but for the most part, it's really a matter of just taking test taking, adding it into your school, incorporating it as a part of your daily routine, because your kids are always going to be taking tests, not just necessarily SAT or ACT or PSAT, but, even getting into college as well as in college and even in their job in the future, they're going to be testing your kids. So if you mm-hmm. can understand that no matter what test you're taking, it's probably going to be some kind of logic test, then you have the tools that you need that will help you on future tests.
Right, and you've talked about that on other podcasts as well, of how people that have taken your course have gone on and taken other types of, higher-level tests like the LSATs for law or the MCAT for the medical field. So just using those test strategies, and I believe your own son did that with going to law school, didn't he?
Yes, that is correct.
So in looking at the test, you were able to, find a lot of the things that you discussed earlier with us, the different changes and an overview of why the test was, was changed. But one of the things you were saying, first of all, I just a comment that I can't believe that there were programs out before the test was released, which, again, is, buyer beware. Be careful what you're buying and who is really, in charge of creating these things. You want somebody who is tried and true, and that's the thing. Jean, you've been around quite a while, and you have, hundreds, if not thousands, of testimonials. The second part is some of the misinformation that's out there. That's one of the reasons we have this podcast, so that we can inform you of up-to-date information. And as our listeners know, I have a vested interest in this because my kids are currently in the process. Michael did take the new PSAT. We have not gotten his scores yet, but he did take that in October. And, you know, he did say it was different, and so I'm interested to see how he did. But, you know, also because we want to combat misinformation. And so you were just sharing with me before we went on the air about, you know, something that you had read recently, and you were just saying, oh, no, you know, that's not right. So can you, we're not going to obviously point fingers or anything like that, but like what was it that you read, and can you give us the correct information for that in case someone of our listeners
sure.
may have read the same thing?
Sure. And, you know, I just got an article that was sent to my desk this morning, and I was, you know, by a test prep company, and, you know, I was kind of reading through it, and I, you know, I certainly disagree with some of the things they said. And a couple things, for example, they said that the essay graders will spend several minutes reading your, you know, reading the essay. Well, that's absolutely not true. They spend about 30 seconds, you know, which if you think about that in general, that means they're not spending a great deal of time, you know, seeing what an amazing writer your child is. They're really only looking for just a few key points. I mean, if you've got several minutes, you know, you can analyze it. You can actually, you know, pick it apart a little bit, but they don't really do that. There are over 3,400 judges in the United States that grade the SAT essays. And, you know, they start working from 7 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night in some cases. And, you know, they're just skimming through these essays very quickly because they have thousands to look at. So knowing that they only spend about 30 seconds means that you don't have to have some kind of elaborate essay, even on the new SAT essay. It really is a matter of analyzing it and just basically, you know, just showing why the writer, you know, how did they come to their conclusion of their argument on the new test. I think another thing that they said in this particular article was to have 3 to 5 paragraphs indented. Well, you know, again, thinking really you need 5 paragraphs, but more than that, they're not looking at formatting. I think one of the things that people think about is grammar when it comes to the essay, and that they're looking at it. Did you indent, and did you use commas, and did you, you know, dot, dot, dot? In 30 seconds, that is not their concern. You know, you've got these very, very subjective essays, and these judges have to have a very objective grading system. And nitpicking at grammar is not one of them. So, you know, don't worry so much about that. Not that you should, you know, be, you know, write in a terrible manner. I don't mean that. But don't get too hung up on that. And I think one of the other misconceptions on this particular article that I read this morning was that the essay is probably harder than the ACT. The new SAT is probably harder than the existing ACT. Again, I disagree because they're basically 95% the same test. Even before the SAT changed, you know, you still had a very standardized test that had similar recurring patterns that you saw in the ACT, even though the ACT had a quote-unquote science section, which, by the way, you don't need to be a science genius to ace it. It's just logic. So I don't agree with that. The good news is every college just about takes SAT or ACT. It doesn't matter which one your child takes. And if the college does prefer one over the other, they'll just simply convert the score. So don't get too hung up. You know, strategies on the SAT will work on the ACT and vice versa.
Okay, very good. Let's talk about that term standardized. I was blessed, and I'm using that word very loosely, to have taken a whole credit in college on testing and giving tests. So, you know, it can be very, very boring, and it has a lot of statistics in it, and I'm okay with math, but we gave a lot of, we gave the Stanford-Binet and some other tests that really can only be given by psychologists, but we were given the privilege of getting to know those tests and giving them to our fellow students, you know, our peer group. We tested each other and, you know, got IQs and things like that, which was really fun. And I remember testing my brothers and you know, just so that we had the opportunity to use the test and to become familiar with them and to chart and to graph and all of that. But most people listening are parents, and maybe we have some, you know, teenagers, which I hope you are listening and following along and subscribing to this podcast. This is really going to help you. And so you may not be as familiar with the term standardized test and exactly what that means, and that is why, Jean, you have been very, very reassuring in the big mess of things that, you know, that it's going to be okay. So before we get into the definition of standardized tests, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want you to go ahead and share with us exactly what a standardized test is and what that process means. We'll be right back.
With College Prep Genius, free college can happen to you. That's right. It's never too early to start thinking about test prep to secure your future. Imagine getting free tuition, room and board, free grad school, and more based on your SAT score. College Prep Genius is the key to free. This award-winning, nationally featured program teaches students the logic behind the SAT. You'll learn to answer every question in 30 seconds, raise your score as much as 600 points, and go to the college of your dreams for free. Visit College Prep Genius to know more.
Well, hi and welcome back. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and this is an episode of College Prep Genius with Jean Burke. And we were so into talking about this week's session that I did not even take a commercial break till here at the end, but that's okay, and that just shows you how intense we can be with some of our sessions here. So, Jean, before we went to break, I asked you about the standardized testing and explaining a little bit more to our listeners about what that really means.
Well, you know, especially for homeschoolers, it's really important to understand that when a college looks at a student, you know, basically all kids look, many kids look equal on paper. And, you know, a 4.0 at one high school is not the same at another because every school calculates their scores differently. And we as homeschoolers, you know, when a college looks at our child's transcript, they really don't know whether we've made that stuff up or not. You know, all our kids get A's, right? But so when it comes to a college look, you know, being able to set students apart, they have to use some form of standardized testing because, you know, one student might go to a very difficult school and get a certain GPA, and another student might go to a very easy school and have the same GPA. So they need something that levels the playing field. So that is why a standardized test, such as an SAT or an ACT, is the numerical component that's common to all applicants because it's the same across the board, regardless of what school you go to or regardless of what state you live in. So the standardized test by its very nature means that it is standardized, or in other words, it uses the same standards when they write the questions, it uses the same patterns, same concepts. That way, every single time you know what to expect. It's not random. And so it's the only way that, let's say a college had a student who applied who had a 1,500 SAT out of their 1,600. They could look at 5 years ago, a student who had maybe a 1480 and compare it to the 1500 and say, okay, what kind of success rate did this student have? And that's how they keep all this data on how they oftentimes can determine whether a student will be successful in college or not by looking at past records that they've kept. Now, I mean, again, don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean that if you bomb the SAT that you're going to do poorly in college. That's not what I mean at all. But it's their only way of knowing how can I look at this student and at least get some kind of general idea of the possibilities of you know, what they're going to do in college? Because, you know, there's so many scholarships that when these admissions counselors give them out that go wasted. You know, two-thirds of students basically drop out of college. And so Right. They're looking for a success rate for their college and to give out a scholarship that's ultimately going to not only benefit the student, you know, benefit the college and, you know, produce some students that become supporting alumni. So there's a long-term plan and when a college looks at these standardized scores. So, But that's actually good, though, because, you know, I've met, for example, I was at a conference, you know, a few months ago, and a gentleman came up to me, and he said, you know, I'm a general contractor, and we had to take a test. You know, our job tested us And if you, mm-hmm. you said, you know, in just in my company alone, we had people of many different ages. They came from many different states, and there's a lot of different laws having to do with contract labor. And he said, you know, these questions were very standardized. They were very logically in nature, because that's really the only fair way to equal everybody out, because, you know, we all came from such different backgrounds. So that's what you're going to see. And here's the good news. The fact that it is standardized means it can be figured out.
Right. And basically what they're doing, and because there's been a long history of this, you know, of giving of these tests, and so what you're finding is that most kids answer specific questions correctly, and that's how they're getting the standard, is like they take all of this data and then it's, you know, they divide it into a lot of different categories. But for the purposes of this podcast, without getting super technical, is, you know, there is this mean, and, you know, just think of it as a bell graph, you know, with the most students being able to answer a specific amount of questions. Unless you're really high end, you're going to answer these that typically the average child isn't going to answer, and so forth, so that there is this curve with the average student, the above average and the below average, and that's, you know, just roughly. But also there's a theory too that that goes around homeschooling, and I've had different friends say different things, but one of them is that over like giving a lot of the standardized tests when they're younger, let's say the California Achievement Test, the CAT, or the Iowa Achievement Test, can be detrimental to students later on when they take these other standardized tests, or that they're a benefit. Now, which do you think it is, Jean?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, honestly, we never took any Iowa or Stanford tests, not because I was against them, but more the fact that I kind of knew where my kids were no matter what. I didn't really need a test to tell me that. But I think it really depends on the family. For some families, taking a standardized test teaches a student, you know, that there's, you know, we may not do our own timing at home when it comes to testing, but it does teach them some time management skills. So that could benefit mm-hmm. them. That I guess the flip side of it, as you're saying on some of the other camps, is that because they're not your normal test when it comes to the SAT, it's not like, you know, learning a bunch of information and sort of regurgitating it back out. It's really more right. of looking at it logically. So maybe if they approach it that way. But then again, you know, every other test right. that your child takes at home is going to be based on knowledge. So right. just because the Iowa, the Stanford might be based on knowledge, you know, that's what they're used to taking. They just have to change hats. You know, test right. taking is a learned skill. It's, you know, some kids are natural test takers. They're logically minded, and it's very intuitive to them. And then there's other students who are just as smart, but not necessarily logically minded, but they can also learn to train their brain to think logically. So
right.
I think yeah. there could be benefits either way.
Yeah, and I'm more of the camp of, it's, to me, it's better not to take a lot of standardized tests, because I was, as you were, I knew where my kids were, and that's the beauty of homeschooling and working very closely with your children and understanding where they're struggling and having problems. And so I just think it's interesting that both of us, Jean, neither one of us had our children taking all these standardized tests. Now, they did take, like, their first one. My first two children, the two oldest, did take them when their first year of high school. But then I didn't have them retake it until, and Christina, she thought it was a great game. Like, she really enjoyed test taking. She didn't go into it fearful or anything like that. So, and I am going to say that, you know, my niece is one that struggled with testing, but she took it very young and just was very upset about the whole test-taking experience. and didn't like test or do well, but she is now a doctor. So she was homeschooled up until high school and then went to a high school and obviously got over her fear of taking tests. So, you know, you can look at it either way, but, you know, as always, do what's best for you and your family. So, Jean, anything in wrapping up this this session today on the testing and the changes in the test?
You know, kind of go along with what we've been talking about. I think that whether you're doing the IELTS or the Stanford or not doing it, I think that test taking should be in your school somewhere along the way because it's eventually going to happen no matter what. You can't get out of taking tests. And so since some students are natural test takers and some are not, you know, it's better to start your kids early on. I'm such a big believer in the longer you wait, the less time you have to improve. It takes that test anxiety off the student so that they're not getting to, let's say, the junior year in high school and full of anxiety because there's so much weight on a test. If they've been doing test-taking strategies and, you know, every day, just a few a day throughout the, you know, their career in school, then it becomes second nature to them. And for those who are natural test takers, I mean, they, you know, it just, you know, a few more little things will put them over the top. And for those who are not natural test takers, you know, they have built up the skills to know how to take a test. And for them, it's going to be just as easy as, you know, the natural test taker because they've worked at it, you know, and kind of incorporate it into their life. So starting early, I can't emphasize that enough, how important it is. I mean, I've got 6th and 7th graders who take my class and or my program, and they score higher than a senior on their SATs. And that tells you right there that it's not about curriculum. It can't be because obviously they haven't had this kind of courses that the seniors have had. So, you know, get your kids early. You can make it an elective when you incorporate it into your school. And
right.
Your kids will thank you later. They literally will thank you. They won't be the kids who are all of a sudden, and I get these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these a year, students who are a junior. It's their first time to take an SAT. You know, they've got school, they've got homework, they've got part-time jobs, sports, piano, and they are already so maxed out that to add one more thing on their plate really puts them, you know, over the edge. So, you know, it does your kids a disservice to wait, yeah.
That's very good. And we do have two shows. Show podcast 14 and 15 are both Goodbye Test Anxiety, Hello Free College, and there's a part one and part two. Very good information from Jean, and also find it at the collegeprepgenius.com/podcast, and you will find all our show notes there. Thank you so much, Jean, for coming on, and I look forward to our future broadcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the College Prep Genius radio show. You can find more episodes at collegeprepgenius.com/podcast or listen on iTunes, on your favorite podcast app, on your phone, on your computer, or on the go. Remember, visit collegeprepgenius.com for more information, and we'll see you soon.